Welcome to Home But Not Alone with Tim and Sarah, where we talk about real life as a stay-at-home Catholic parent. If it's noon and you're still in your pajamas, have reheated your coffee 3 times and tried to pray but got distracted, this is the place for you. Life is crazy, but through it all, remember, you're never alone. You've got God's grace and our friendship coming your way. Today on Home But Not Alone, we're going to chat about NFP from a man's perspective. I count on this episode to be enlightening. Today's sponsor is Rooted Designs. You can find the shop at therootedmom.com, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Sarah. I'm just laughing so hard right now. Enlightening.
It should be enlightening.
I hope so.
I mean, and this is not something that men like talk about a lot, I don't think.
No, not very often. I wouldn't think so.
Thank you for being willing to share your perspective.
Yeah, why not? I talk about anything, clearly. There are things I will not say just for the sake of keeping it clean, but we gave talks to some senior high school guys recently, and of course we opened it up to questions.
And oh boy.
But you know, it was something, but they needed to know this information apparently, so now they have it.
Okay, so we're going to do our best to keep it, you know, clean. But, I mean, probably you're going to want to use your best judgment anyways, because still, you might not want to be having maybe your very little kids around for some of this discussion. So just keep that in mind. We're going to be talking. So NFP, if you don't know, listeners, is natural family planning. We'll talk a little bit about more of that later. But I want to just tell you a little bit about our sponsor before we dive in. So our sponsor is the lovely Emily from Rooted Designs. And like I mentioned, her website is therootedmom.com. And she sent us a bunch of goodies. So she sent me a t-shirt that I love. It's a nice, it's black t-shirt. I love like my black t-shirts. That's like my total mom uniform. And it says Squad Goals, Raise Tiny Saints. And I was so excited when it came in. I put it right on and wore it out to the next homeschool co-op day because I was like, this is perfect. I have to show off my new Catholic t-shirt to all my Catholic mom friends. And so I just love it. So you can check out, she has a lot of different t-shirts in her shop. And then she sent me a couple stickers. So I have 3 stickers here from her. They're vinyl stickers. And like I mentioned before, I like to put my vinyl stickers on my Can Jam. I got my holy Can Jam. That's where I keep all my Catholic sticker collection. So I have one that says Jesus is my jam, and it has like a pair of headphones. And then I have one, it has a Marian symbol on it, and it says Totus Tuus and the Mysteries of the Rosary, which is really cool. And then I have this one that I really like. It has the AMDG. So those are the initials for the Latin that I'm probably going to mess up the pronunciation, that says Ad Majorem Deo Gloriam. And so that means for the glory of God, or for the greater glory of God, or something like that.
For the greater glory of God.
I don't really know Latin too well, but like, I like that. So
I don't know a lot of Latin, but I know some, when I was in youth ministry, I had teenagers who went to a high school where that was the kind of the motto, the slogan, whatever it may be. I don't know. So,
okay, perfect. And it's a total cool Catholic phrase. So you can check that out and so much more at her website, therootedmom.com. All right, so let's talk NFP.
Yes. So a little bit of my backstory, my wife and my backstory, to give you guys some context. So my wife, as I have mentioned before, is a high-risk OB nurse, or antepartum. It's been referred to as Team Keep 'Em In. So like, she's with mom and baby, something's wrong with mom or baby prior to birth. So she's not what a lot of people think of when they think of OB nurses. She's not labor and delivery.
Right.
So she deals with a lot of, sometimes she'll deal with the mom after the birth. But that's, she's primarily before birth. Anyway, she's been doing that for many years. And even before that, her mother has been working for the wonderful St. Paul VI Institute in Nebraska, where they basically invented the Creighton model of natural family planning. And so her mother has been involved in educating people in NFP for many, many years. So this is something, it was very odd for me because I was vaguely aware of natural family planning as a concept prior to getting engaged. But my wife had been charting her cycle for many years to avoid health problems and to rectify health problems. And she even knew about stuff before that because of her mother. So I walked in to this set of circumstances where it was basically like, okay, time to fill in, you know, the husband-to-be because my bride...
Okay.
let's put it this way. When we went in for the first ultrasound of our first child, I thought that because everybody was quiet for so long that they couldn't find a heartbeat. Turns out the OB doctor and the high-risk OB nurse saw the heartbeat immediately, and they were both just like, this is cool. Like, they were just looking at everything. And I was staring at a screen that might as well have been just completely blank because I have a history degree and those two studied OB. So,
right. So when you got engaged, it was time for you to learn NFP. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. It was time for me to jump in with some of the experts. Like, I didn't get to go in and learn with my wife.
Okay.
We went to an intro session to learn the basics of our methodology so that I could learn the basics of the methodology because she knew them. Now, there's always more to learn, but...
Always,
she knew everything that you could know up to that point, everything that was relevant. And so it was very strange walking into this set of circumstances going, okay, so I always like to refer to it as Team NFP because it's not just, you know, the woman. It's, okay, it's my wife, it's me, it's the OBGYN, it's our NFP instructor, and on occasions it's my mother-in-law when we need additional information. So it's a whole group of people, all of whom have like a decade's worth of experience minimum.
Wow.
And then me. And I'm like, I got nothing. This is so, it was very bizarre.
Now how did you feel about that? Like, were you totally on board or were you like, this is weird, I don't want to be talking about all this weird personal?
No, didn't faze me at all.
Oh, okay.
Because I had been, you know, as I've said, I'd been in youth ministry for years. And if you're in youth ministry for more than 6.5 minutes, you are already used to talking about incredibly uncomfortable things or things that are uncomfortable for most people.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd become known to some as the chastity youth minister. I'm like, yeah, let's talk about this stuff. And people are like, ooh, this is uncomfortable and personal. I'm like, I know, isn't it great? Like, So yes, there was a huge learning curve and there were things where I'm like, okay, what's appropriate? What's inappropriate? What do I, you know, all these sorts of things. But yeah, I had to dive into the deep end and try and swim with the sharks. And that's a terrible analogy for this because none of them are sharks. I had to dive into the deep end and swim with Michael Phelps, I suppose. That's a better reference. Do you know who Michael Phelps is living
in Rome? He's that Olympic swimmer guy.
Yeah. Got in trouble for drugs. Exactly.
Yeah, right.
That's just
also terrible. A bad analogy, I guess, if we're going to draw it out. So would you have any advice for dudes who are getting engaged and their fiancés are like, let's learn NFP. And they're like, what would you say to them?
I would say get over it if you're uncomfortable. Push through it. Because if you think that saying the word cervical mucus is uncomfortable, wait till the birth of your child and what you're going to see and experience there. Okay.
Yeah, that's not pretty.
It's not pretty. And it's beautiful, but it's not pretty. And that's the difference. So
my husband isn't here talking to us, but when we were engaged, that was when I first learned NFP. Like, I knew about it. You know, my mom taught us this is NFP, this is what we do, but I didn't actually learn it myself until we were engaged, and he was totally on board. Like, we learned it together at that time. And I think that is the perfect way to go.
Yes, I think it would have been great to learn it together.
I mean, hey, having her as an expert is good too. But like when you go to the classes, the NFP classes, okay, so Chad and I also, we're now certified through Couple to Couple League to teach the symptothermal method. So we did that a few years down the road. But one of the things that I was just thinking about from both from the perspective as a teacher and like from learning NFP together is the advice that the NFP teachers give, like about getting the man involved in NFP, like the husband should hand you your thermometer in the morning and like put your observations on your chart, etc. Don't you think that's kind of patronizing? Like, I can pick up my own thermometer, give me a break. Aren't there better ways for a man to get involved in NFP than like those kind of tasks? Like, what do you think about that?
That was 17 questions you just asked. So what? But let me go back. Yes, is it a little like, you know, condescending? You know, is it a little? Yeah, it is, but not intentionally.
Okay.
And I think when NFP instructors or other people talk about like, oh, okay, you know, here's get the man involved, and sometimes it's just seems like the most insignificant tasks, it's because we struggle to understand how else we can do that. We struggle to come up with better ways. But it's not, oh, well, this is all the man can do, or the woman needs this help with these simple tasks. It's that the NFP instructor or whoever is giving that advice recognizes that this is an opportunity for unity. This is an opportunity for bonding. This is an opportunity for man and wife to work together in cooperation with their fertility and with God. And that is a small symbolic way of the man to have his participation in the process.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. So it's easy for us to talk about like unity and complementarity, but from a practical standpoint, frankly, it's really difficult because when it comes to fertility, when it comes to conception, pregnancy, and birth, from a physical standpoint, the woman obviously carries much more of the, I don't want to use the word burden, but it just came out of my mouth anyway, but much more of the responsibility, much more of the physical toll falls on the woman.
Yeah.
And same thing with when you are charting a cycle, you know, I'm not going to be, you know, going around doing cervical mucus observations. Like, that's one.
Doesn't seem right to you.
No, that's not how that works. And so it's going to be harder for me to participate in that way. So any little way, like ever since we've been engaged, other than a little break we took for my own mental health, the chart has been on my side of our bed. And before we were married, I had it. And so my fiance at the time, my now wife, would have to text or call me and tell me what her observation is from that day so that I could put it down. Okay. So that did make me feel a little bit more involved. There was a part of it where I was like, boy, we're spending a lot of time focusing on my wife. And isn't this supposed to be both of us? But the reality is that the way God designed human sexuality is that the woman's fertility is, for lack of a better term, inconsistent, and the man's fertility is consistent. A man is either fertile or he's not.
Right.
There is no, well, sometimes. So in terms of that, and in terms of being able to preserve fertility and to rectify problems, again, there's a lot more going on with the woman's reproductive cycle than, say, with the man's reproductive organs. And so I think that, yeah, it doesn't intentionally come off, or it's not intentionally condescending. It's an intentional effort to, well, bring about something that this is all symbolic of. Using NFP is a tool. It's a means to hopefully help your marriage. People sometimes treat it as, you know, I've heard people go on a retreat before they get married. They hear about NFP and it's pitched as, this is how you have a perfect marriage. And it's like, No. This is one tool in cooperating with one another toward having a stronger marriage, towards working together. But if you're relying on NFP, and if you're relying on charting a cycle, I should say, and you're not communicating well in your day-to-day life,
right,
you're not going to have a healthy marriage. Right. So,
Can I just throw out a few things here, just thinking about, my husband and I practicing NFP together and some of the things, maybe thoughts into his perspective. So I do all of our charting. We don't do paper charts anymore. I chart on an app in my phone.
Fancy.
So I do. Yes. It's just easier for me to remember what the heck is going on and get those signs down before I forget them. So I do all the charting. But over the years, my husband's a mathematician. So he's really good at like reading charts and understanding them and applying all those rules to figure out what phase you're in. So I relied more heavily on him to look at our charts with me and say, well, what do you think about what this is showing us? And so I think that for us, that worked really well, having him be very involved in interpreting the chart. What do you think about that?
I think that that's good that you have him. And I think it's good that I have my bride.
Right.
We need these people with these brains who can look at charts and understand things. Because I don't. And that's, yes. But I think in general, that's fantastic because it's reflective of the fact that you two have found a way to cooperate. You've found a way to be compatible be complementary.
Yes.
In using this methodology of family planning, of cycle charting, of whatever you want to talk about.
Whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, where your skills and his skills, you're working together. Anyway,
So I feel like, the point here is like those are, good attempts at ideas from the NFP instructors. But the bottom line is the husband has to get involved and the husband and wife have to find like the way that works for them to get the husband involved and not just have him on the sideline. Like another thing is the whole process of discernment throughout using NFP. In my opinion and in our marriage, the husband is the head of our family and the head of the household, and he plays a huge part in discernment, especially in NFP, with the size of our family and how things are going with his work. Like a lot of times some of those factors, and especially for us, it's like even planning the timing of having a baby, like it'd be really good to shoot for having a baby in the summer so that he's not like in the middle of giving final exams. That's really hard for him to step away from. So like the process of discernment, I've relied heavily on him as well as the head of the household. Like, what are your thoughts of that? So is that another thing that's going to be like specific to families? Obviously discernment is different for every couple. Or what do you think about that in general as the husband's role of the head of the household?
Well, I think in a lot of ways it will vary from family to family because for example, in my role as stay-at-home dad, I'm not going to be impacted in the same way. Although my wife has said things like, if we had a baby at blah, blah, blah time, I'd get the holidays off for maternity leave, which is always an appealing idea.
Yeah.
But so those things are factors. But I think what you've really got at here is the fact that the discernment process has to involve both husband and wife.
Yes.
And unfortunately, there are a lot of people who treat NFP like Catholic contraception, or they just treat it like the woman's responsibility. And the man looks over and says, hey, is tonight a good night? And it's like, dude, you should have some sort of an idea before that point if tonight is a good night, whether it's because you're avoiding or whether it's because, whatever else happened during the day. You know, it's still worth asking the question at times about if your spouse is interested. But there has to be that consistent communication so the discernment process can happen, so that it can be both husband and wife. And I think one of the things that I was thinking about this recently, there was a old sitcom Scrubs, which I liked. I thought it was a good little silly.
I used to watch that sometimes. Yeah,
it was silly. And unfortunately, they had some parts where I was like, not so much. The right. one guy was actually slipping his wife the birth control pill because he wasn't ready to have kids yet. And he ended up having a conversation with her where he said, men are trained, or men are designed, whatever he said, to believe that a baby is the worst possible outcome of sex. And my thought was, dude, that shouldn't be the case. If that's your attitude, then your attitude toward the marital union itself is fearful. And yeah. that's wrong. That's unhealthy. It's damaging. It's, you know, it's not going to get you anywhere good. And so I often think about it as like having like the contraceptive mentality of, well, I'm not going to have a baby at this time. I'm not going to have a baby at this time. I'm not going to have a baby at this time. Hmm. You end up creating this reality for yourself where when it does happen, when you conceive, you have a pregnancy scare, or when you actually have a pregnancy that's not planned, then it kind of shatters your reality. One of the worst words in the English language is should. This should happen, or this shouldn't happen. You create an absolute, and then you have like this minor psychological break. And cognitive behavioral therapists have to work with people to then help them understand A leads to B, which leads to C, which leads to D. Because we've created these realities where we say A leads to nothing, or A leads to B only if I choose C. You know, it's just a bunch of nonsense that we've created these fictional realities, and then right. we basically have psychological trauma.
Right.
And I always use the example of like, I've been the guy who's like, I define myself by my job, and then I lose my job through no fault of my own, and then I don't know who I am anymore. And that's where you set these reality barriers, and then reality itself kicks in and says, sorry, that's not how it's going to work. So it's already stressful enough having kids, but the idea of closing yourself off to life like that, or, you know, not being a part of the discernment process, it really can hit you even harder when conception happens. So I've always said I want to be the guy who shares my entire being with my bride. I don't want to just share, you know, part of who I am. It's not, my marriage isn't something that happens after work hours. My marriage is 24 hours a day. She gets the best of me. She gets the worst of me. She gets my struggles, my joys, my personal and professional failures, my successes, my student loan debt. She gets everything. She even gets my fertility. And I think that when men hold that back, it's because they have been convinced to shift their priorities elsewhere. Yeah. They have been convinced that I have to succeed over here, and anything that deviates from that is a failure. And unfortunately, that's just not a healthy mentality. I don't know. What do you think?
No, I think I understand what you're getting at here, like that whole contraceptive mentality and the whole fear that goes into it. And I was just thinking about the struggle that abstinence sometimes can be when you're practicing NFP. Like mm-hmm. sometimes it does feel like, well, it would be easier if we were just doing what everyone else did and used contraception, but that's just not an option, you know, for us as faithful Catholics using NFP. But sometimes that can be really hard, like especially in certain times when you're charting, like postpartum, there can be extended periods of abstinence. And I feel like sometimes people want to say, like, they want to kind of stereotype and say that's hard. Abstinence is harder for the man than it is on the woman. And I don't know if we can quantify it that way. I think abstinence is a challenge, and for the marriage, for the whole marriage, not just for the man and for the woman, but for the whole marriage. But it's one of those challenges that, I don't know, we kind of got to like pick up our cross. So what do you think about that?
Well, I think that anytime somebody's abstinence is more difficult for the man, they're doing two things. One, they're diminishing what the marriage itself is by saying a married couple should be drawn to one another in, you know, physically, emotionally, spiritually. Now, there will be times you don't like each other, but you should be drawn to one another because that's part of the marital union. So I think that's part of the problem of saying, well, men have it, abstinence is more difficult for men. The other thing it does is it diminishes men, because whenever it's like, oh, well, that's just boys being boys. Men need this. Men have desires. Yeah, I had a desire for a bacon cheeseburger in the middle of the night. That didn't mean that I drove down to a burger place and got one. No. You know what I did? I went to sleep. Okay, I went back to sleep because it was the middle of the night, and that was not a...
This is not the right time for a bacon cheeseburger.
Exactly. And so when it's not time for something, use your self-control. Right. Exercise it. Is abstinence difficult? Are times of abstinence difficult? You're darn right they are.
Yeah.
But whoever said marriage was supposed to be easy? I'm still trying to figure out who started that lie, because it's so damaging.
Yeah.
And who started the lie that sex is supposed to be something you're entitled to a certain amount of with a certain frequency, or, you know, at your own whim or anything like that? These are not things that actually work within reality. So in order to have a healthy marriage, you can't sit there and say, well, I want this when I want this. Well, I say this with love for anyone who's listening and struggling with this. Too darn bad, because as an adult, we each need to learn. You don't get what you want whenever you want it. So, I mean, my three-year-old thinks that's how it goes. So if we want to approach marriage the way my three-year-old would, then we can expect, here's what I want when I want. But if we want to enter into a sacramental marriage, what we have to do is say, how can I give of myself fully for the other person, even if that means, you know, not getting something that I'm going to enjoy right now, even if that means, you know, the best I can do for us is to not do something in this case. So does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you. I like how you are calling people three-year-olds.
I mean it with nothing but love and respect. Yes, but unfortunately, yes. And I've done the same thing too. Not in regards to this, but in regards to other things where I'm like, but I, even in giving up something for Lent, in the back of my mind, I keep thinking, but I want it. And it's like, yeah. And then I hear my three-year-old yell the same thing from the other room. And I think, oh, this is me succumbing to my simplest instincts instead of challenging myself to be bigger, to be greater, to be higher. I don't know. So I just want to kind of close this out real quick by saying, men, I want to challenge you to really try to find ways to bond with your wife in, you know, not just physically, but physically, intellectually, spiritually, emotionally, with good communication. And maybe you're a man who does that. And if so, thank you, because this is an important part of being a husband, of being a father, of being a man, of being whatever role you have right now in life. It's important. And if you're struggling with it, I'm praying for you, and I get it. I really do. Because these things are not easy. And as men, we have been lied to by our culture over and over again about what our role is as man, as husband, as father. And so I just want to challenge you to start to open yourself up to what is it that God is really calling you to as a man, as a husband, as a father, as whatever you may be right now. Because God's got something incredible in mind for men, for each and every man. I want to thank everybody for listening today, and thanks to Rooted Designs for sponsoring this episode. Join us next time for Awkward Catholic Moments. If you could, please subscribe to this podcast, follow us on social media, like things, comment, share, rate us, leave reviews, whatever you could do, we appreciate it. Sarah, where can people find you?
ToJesusSincerely.com is my website, and I'm on social media at ToJesusSincerely.
And you can find me at chastelove.org and at thechastelove on social media. Now, write down all the crazy and embarrassing things your kids do, both to preserve memories and to defend yourself if they ever try to blackmail you. And remember, you're never alone.